Hi, I'm Gary from Stonyfield, the organic yogurt company. We started making yogurt as a way to fund an organic farming school, and 28 years later, our mission is still all about healthy food, healthy people, and a healthy planet. Today, we support 200,000 acres of organic family farms, and we give 10% of our profits to efforts that protect and restore the earth. So we're proud to support thoughtful programming like Living on Earth, and hope you will too. Donate at LOE.org.
From the Jennifer and Ted Stanley Studios in Somerville, Massachusetts, it's Living on Earth. I'm Bruce Kellerman. In 2007, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that carbon dioxide is a climate-changing pollutant, and the EPA could regulate it under the Clean Air Act. The EPA came up with new regulations, but backers of fossil fuels, agribusiness, and Tea Party politicians claim the EPA's new regs are costly and burdensome for companies. So they're suing in federal district court, which held 2 days of oral arguments last week. The case is wonky with terms like endangerment and tailoring, but lucky for us on hand is Robert Glicksman. He's a professor of environmental law at the George Washington University. And Professor Glicksman, welcome to Living on Earth.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So this is a big deal case, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's one of the more important Clean Air Act cases and indeed environmental cases to come down in quite a while.
But didn't the Supreme Court already rule on this and say the EPA had the authority to come up with the rules?
Yes, but it didn't mandate that EPA regulate greenhouse gas emissions from cars or define exactly how to regulate if EPA decided to do so.
So the EPA came up with its rules and regulations to enforce the Clean Air Act and clean up the greenhouse gases. And that's what this court case is about, is those specific rules and regs.
Yes, it's about EPA's efforts to follow through on the Supreme Court's instruction to consider whether or not greenhouse gases present endangerment to public health and welfare, and if so, to control the greenhouse gas emissions that are causing that problem.
So are the plaintiffs arguing that greenhouse gases are not endangering the public health and welfare?
Well, they are challenging what's known as the endangerment finding that EPA issued after the Supreme Court's decision. Early in the Obama administration, EPA issued an official endangerment finding in which it concluded that the scientific evidence supported the conclusion that the emissions of greenhouse gases such as carbon dioxide are indeed creating an endangerment to the public health and welfare.
So do the plaintiffs have a case in this regard? You know, is the EPA science not good?
The courts tend to be very deferential to EPA scientific determinations. And given that the Supreme Court has addressed at least some aspects of this case thus far, I would be very surprised if the plaintiffs were to prevail on their challenge to the endangerment finding. I think the court will uphold EPA's conclusion that greenhouse gas emissions are contributing to climate change in ways that present threats to the environment and the public health.
Another big contentious issue is what they call the tailoring rule. What's that?
The tailoring rule is an effort by EPA to regulate factory emissions of greenhouse gases in a way that the agency thinks makes sense. Greenhouse gas emissions became subject to regulation under the Clean Air Act, and therefore EPA became obliged to require states in issuing permits to factories to regulate those emissions. The problem is you would wind up regulating an enormous number of sources, and not only factories such as manufacturing plants, not only electric utilities that burn coal and emit carbon dioxide, but much smaller facilities, even schools, hospitals, and other public buildings. And they simply don't have the funds or the personnel to handle the crushing workload that would result. So what EPA is trying to do in the tailoring rule is to tailor or narrow the scope of the permit program so that only the largest sources are going to be controlled by this new set of regulations.
So what the opponents are saying is, we're going to argue you into submission. If you can't regulate everybody equally, then the tailoring rule ain't going to pass muster.
Yes. Essentially, what the industry is arguing is that EPA lacks the discretion to decide what the cutoff levels would be. So if it's going to regulate anybody, it must regulate everyone. The goal, of course, is, as I think you've implied, to wind up with EPA regulating no one. Because if EPA thinks that regulation of the multiplicity of smaller emitters is not feasible, then I think the hope on the part of the challengers is that EPA will essentially throw in the towel and decide not to regulate anybody.
So what do you think the court will decide in terms of the tailoring rule?
It's a close question, I think, and because the courts under the Clean Air Act have never addressed this precise question, it's impossible to predict. The real question is whether the court is going to insist upon a literal application of the meaning of the statute or accept EPA's justification that it is appropriate to allow EPA to adopt modifications to the statute that make the statute feasible as opposed to impossible to implement. And it's possible the court could go either way on that question.
When do you think the court will hand down its judgment?
What's unusual about this case is that the court is holding oral argument over a series of several consecutive days, which indicates that the court regards this as a very complicated set of questions which are related to one another. And so it may take a bit longer for the court to sort this all out than it would in a typical case, but if I were to make a wild guess, I suspect that we'll have some answer by some point this summer.
Could this case go back to the Supreme Court, or is that already a done deal?
I don't think there's any question that this is a case that could wind up in the Supreme Court's lap once again. We'll wait to see what the Court of Appeals panel decides. If the court winds up split 2-1, that at least marginally increases the chance, because it indicates that at least one federal judge on each side found that the opposing parties had viable arguments.
Well, Professor Glicksman, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Robert Glicksman is an environmental law professor at the George Washington University Law School.